listening to Vet Candy.
You are listening to Vet Candy Magazine, Special Edition, Respiratory Disease. Welcome to the World of Vet Candy by Dr. Jill Lopez. In this issue of Vet Candy Magazine, we are introducing you to Alyssa Madges, a veterinary technician, mom of two, and entrepreneur. I met Alyssa during the pandemic. She connected with me first on LinkedIn, and then we connected over a Zoom call. It was friendship at first sight. We talked about the challenge of motherhood during the pandemic and about her aspirations. But mostly, we spoke about our lives in a way that went much deeper than your normal Zoom banter. She told me how much she loved educating veterinary teams and why she and her longtime friend, Caitlin Keat, founded Empowering Veterinary Teams, LLC. Most entrepreneurs on the rise will talk about profits and building an empire, but Alyssa's aspirations are grounded in passion and love for our profession. Alyssa is also teaming up with veterinary criticalist Dr. Anthony Gonzalez to bring you a certification program in respiratory disease management, courtesy of Trudel Animal Health, one of the six new certification programs that we will be adding to Vet Candy's 2021 Veterinary Continuing Education portfolio. The course guides participants through the latest research and cutting-edge technologies. The certification programs are free for all veterinary professionals and can be accessed 24/7 at www.myvetcandy.com/RESP. As Editor-in-Chief, I would like to thank my assistant editor, Shannon Gregoire, and our amazing writers who bring their expertise to this endeavor. They have all made this issue possible, and I hope you enjoy it. How Alyssa Madges Stays Happy, Confident, and Energized by A.M. Kuska. When Alyssa Madges had to have reconstructive surgery on her knees, she knew her work as a dedicated vet technician was over. With legs held together by hardware, 12-hour shifts helping animals were not possible. Yet her passion for lending a helping hand was as strong as ever, and she knew that even if her body couldn't keep up, her heart still wanted to be there for the animals and the vet community she loved. The combination of her love for vet medicine and her physical inability to work long hours inspired her to create Empowering Veterinary Teams, or EVT. EVT is a program to educate and inspire veterinary teams. Lessons include things like CPR courses, soft skills, and more. They offer both general options and customizable programs for vet clinics. The result is far-reaching and profound. Many vet clinics who have used EVT report how excited and empowered their teams felt after a course. It has uplifted many vet clinic teams, from individuals to the whole company. Alyssa Madges didn't develop this company overnight. It has been developing in her heart for years, thanks to the growth mindset that helped her become who she is. Alyssa started out with a dream of becoming a veterinarian, but ended up declining an acceptance letter to veterinary school. In her heart, she knew letting that dream go was best for her, but it was also very hard to do. Instead, she decided to grow where she was planted and do her best to have a meaningful career while focusing on family at the same time. Years down the road, she's thankful for that decision and for the place she currently is in her life. She has developed a meaningful career that has helped veterinary technicians and other team members in a myriad of different ways. She has helped them realize that they aren't just vet techs, but essential and valid members of a team working to help animals. Alyssa believes that finding purpose is one of the most important things you can do for yourself and for others. When you truly know what you want to do with your life, it is much easier to find a path forward and to develop a growth mindset. Finding our purpose in life doesn't happen overnight. She believes it takes time to find the beauty within each of us and the direction that is right for each and every individual. She also affirms that everyone should learn to believe in themselves. When we are confident in our own inner power, we can be a light shining on others to help them discover theirs as well. EVT reflects this beautiful view of the world. Alyssa works hard to show individuals their strengths and to help them develop those strengths for the good of their team. By building others up, she creates an inspiring team that helps both pets and people.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, this is Dr. Quincy Hawley, and I'm here to tell you about a new show. It's Vet Candy Rounds with the Hawleys. That's right, Dr. Tierra, the love of my life, and I have teamed up to bring you the most fascinating cases in the world. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify, or a podcast platform of your choice, only on Vet Candy Radio.
Behavioral predictors of subsequent respiratory illness signs in shelter dogs. A study evaluated whether behavior at intake can predict occurrence and progression of upper respiratory disease in dogs at animal shelters. 84 dogs were assessed throughout their stay at an animal shelter. The dogs were subjected to a behavioral assessment, 1 minute in kennel behavioral observations across two observation periods. Urine cortisol to creatine, C-to-C ratio, was also evaluated. The occurrence and progression of upper respiratory disease was monitored through repeated clinical exams. The study showed that sociability and curiosity scores were associated with increased illness. However, activity and anxiety scores were not associated with illness. Urinary cortisol levels did not predict subsequent illness. 5 Steps for Starting a Healthy Lifestyle by Lauren Hodges. So, you've made the decision that it's time to kick your health up a notch and focus on your body's needs. That's fantastic. The first thing I need you to remember is that this is a lifestyle, a journey, not a quick fix. You need to make active changes to your daily life in order to reach any healthy lifestyle goal. But don't worry. It's really not that intimidating. Let's discuss the first 5 steps you should do when starting your healthy lifestyle journey. Define healthy. You might be thinking, I know what the word healthy means, and I'm sure you do. However, I'm not looking for a Google definition here. What you need to do is sit down with a pen and paper and take a few minutes to determine what healthy means to you. This varies for every single person, and for some, it may mean you reach a certain weight. For others, it's about your mental state. Define it, write it down, and tape it up somewhere you can see it every day. Determine your goals. This is where you get to go all out. Don't think small, think universal. Write down any and every health-related goal that you have. Are you looking to drop X number of pounds? Are you trying to find a happy balance between your work life and your play life? Right now, there are no limits, no boundaries. Don't doubt yourself here. Just write. Break those goals down. For whatever reason, people seem to think that 90 days and 60 days is a short amount of time and that anybody can do anything for 2 to 3 months. Maybe you can, and that's great, but let's start even smaller. If you want a lasting lifestyle change, you need to create daily habits, and the best way to do that is to start with micro goals and build from there. For example, if one of your goals is to run a 5K, start with a simple goal of lightly jogging 0.5 mile every day for 1 week. Create a schedule. Whether on paper, on a whiteboard, or in your phone, it is extremely important to create a schedule for your journey. Treat it almost like it's a job or a must-be-done task. Pencil it in, make time for it, You are more likely to fall off the bandwagon if you see it as an option rather than a priority. Also, a schedule helps you organize your thoughts, keeping you stress-free. Try new things. Every healthy lifestyle should involve some kind of physical activity, but not every type of workout works for every single person, and that's okay. Take 30 days to try out different types of physical activity that you can incorporate into your daily routine. Do not judge yourself for the workouts you are doing, how you are doing them, or why Susie next door loved it and you don't. That's the beauty of this journey. It's yours. These steps may seem small, but the first steps are by far the most important to any healthy lifestyle journey. It's like any math problem. You can't do algebra before you can do simple addition. Take a couple of days to figure those things out, then hit that start button. What to do when you see a coughing dog, by Dr. Jason Stoll. Have you ever walked into an appointment room only to find a coughing dog or cat and thought, I really hope this animal isn't infectious? Well, you are not alone. But it is exactly this type of event that has been disastrous for many veterinarians, resulting in large, expensive clinic outbreaks in which many animals become ill and some die. So, take these three steps to protect yourself, practice, and patients. Do a risk assessment before the patient shows up at your door. Train your reception staff what questions to ask to determine if the appointment poses an infection risk to your practice. See below for a link to a ready-to-use staff tool. Have a plan. Bringing an infectious patient into the lobby should be avoided whenever possible. Put together an infection control plan that details how your practice can safely manage infectious patients, such as dogs with a potentially infectious respiratory illness. This may include staff members wearing disposable gloves and gowns, meeting the client and patient outside the clinic for a quick assessment, and determining where the patient can be safely further examined and housed, if needed. See below for a link to a how-to guide for putting together these policies. Know what's out there. There are many causes for canine cough, and the list of infectious agents continues to grow. What might work for containing one pathogen may not work for another. Stay current on the infectious pathogens in your area through continuing education and websites like Worms and Germs blog. Visit this website for great resources aimed at developing and improving infection control practices at your clinic. Want to get in shape? Try exercise snacking, by Arlene Torres. Let's face it, losing weight is rough. Not all of us have the time to make our own handmade snacks to take with us everywhere, or commit to an hour at the gym. If you're having trouble fitting exercise into your daily routine, try getting your 30 to 60 minutes of daily exercise in through snacking it. That's what scientists at McMaster University in Ontario, Canada are saying. An exercise snack is a short burst of exercise, just like a snack is generally thought of as a small meal. Instead of going to the gym for one long slog, you can step out for a 5-minute walk at lunch, on breaks, after work, and when you get home. These short bursts of exercise take almost no effort, but they can do big things for your health. Studies show that these exercise snacks can help lower your blood sugar levels, lower your blood pressure, and also help with other physiological issues associated for sitting too long in one place. Exercise snacking does have its drawbacks. It won't help you boost your respiratory system in the same way an aerobics class will, nor will it help strengthen your heart as much as a harder workout. Even so, the heart and lungs are only part of a much greater system. By exercising the other 600 or so muscles responsible for your ability to move every day, you can help improve your motivation to exercise more, and help with basic everyday tasks like being able to bend over and pick a tissue up off the floor. If you don't have enough time to hit the gym, get your exercise in small doses throughout the day. 5 minutes here and there will still do wonders for your health and make you feel better about yourself, too. New guidelines for pulmonary hypertension in dogs. The American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine released a consensus statement is to provide a multidisciplinary approach to guidelines for the diagnosis, classification, treatment, and monitoring of pulmonary hypertension in dogs. Dogs with PH can be classified into the following six groups. 1. Pulmonary arterial hypertension group. 2. Left heart disease. 3. Respiratory disease and/or hypoxia. 4. Pulmonary emboli and/or pulmonary thrombi and/or pulmonary thromboemboli group. 5. Parasitic disease, dirofilaria and angiostrongylus. 6. Disorders that are multifactorial or with unclear mechanisms. The consensus's approach to treatment of pulmonary hypertension focuses on decreasing the risk of progression, complications, or both. Recommendations to target underlying diseases or factors contributing to the disease. Dogs should be monitored for improvement, static condition, or progression, and any identified underlying disorder should be addressed and monitored simultaneously. Yoga for anxiety? The science says yes. Yoga improves symptoms of generalized anxiety disorder, a condition with chronic nervousness and worry, suggesting the popular practice may be helpful in treating anxiety in some people. Led by researchers at NYU Grossman School of Medicine, a new study found that yoga was significantly more effective for generalized anxiety disorder than standard education on stress management, but not effective as cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, the gold standard form of structured talk therapy that helps patients identify negative thinking for better responses to challenges. Generalized anxiety disorder is a very common condition, yet many are not willing or able to access evidence-based treatments, says lead study author Naomi M. Simon, MD, a professor in the Department of Psychiatry at NYU Langone Health. Our findings demonstrate that yoga, which is safe and widely available, can improve symptoms for some people with this disorder and could be a valuable tool in an overall treatment plan. For the study, publishing online August 12th in JAMA Psychiatry, 226 men and women with generalized anxiety disorder were randomly assigned to three groups, either CBD, Kundalini yoga, or stress management education, a standardized control technique. After 3 months, both CBT and yoga were found to be significantly more effective for anxiety than stress management. Specifically, 54% of those who practiced yoga met response criteria for meaningfully improved symptoms compared to 33% in the stress education group. Of those treated with CBT, 71% met these symptom improvement criteria. However, after 6 months of follow-up, the CBT response remained significantly better than stress education, the control therapy, while yoga was no longer significantly better, suggesting CBT may have more robust, longer-lasting anxiety-reducing effects. Study details. The study involved an evidence-based protocol for CBD treatment of generalized anxiety disorder, including psychoeducation, cognitive interventions focused on identifying and adapting maladaptive thoughts and worrying, and muscle relaxation techniques. Kundalini yoga included physical postures, breathing techniques, relaxation exercise, yoga theory, and meditation and mindfulness practice. The Stress Management Education Control Group received lectures about the physiological, psychological, and medical effects of stress, as well as the anti-anxiety effects of lifestyle behaviors, such as reducing alcohol and smoking, and the importance of exercise and a healthy diet. Homework consisted of listening to educational material about stress, nutrition, and lifestyle. Each treatment was administered in groups of 3 to 6 participants over weekly 2-hour sessions for 12 weeks with 20 minutes of daily homework assigned. According to researchers, generalized anxiety disorder is a common, impairing, and undertreated condition currently affecting an estimated 6.8 million Americans. While most people feel anxious from time to time, it is considered a disorder when worrying becomes excessive and interferes with day-to-day life. CBT is considered the gold standard first-line treatment. Medications, including antidepressants and sometimes benzodiazepines, may also be used. Yet not everyone is willing to take medication, which can have adverse side effects. And there are challenges with accessing CBT for many, including lack of access to trained therapists and long wait lists. Many people already seek complementary and alternative interventions, including yoga, to treat anxiety, says Dr. Simon. This study suggests that at least short term, there is significant value for people with generalized anxiety disorder to give yoga a try to see if it works for them. Yoga is well tolerated, easily accessible, and has a number of health benefits. According to Dr. Simon, future research should aim to understand who is most likely to benefit from yoga for generalized anxiety disorder to help providers better personalize treatment recommendations. We need more options to treat anxiety because different people will respond to different interventions. And having more options can help overcome barriers to care, she says. Having a range of effective treatments can increase the likelihood people with anxiety will be willing to engage in evidence-based care. Pharyngeal contraction in brachycephalic breeds. Airway syndrome is a common disease in brachycephalic dog breeds. This syndrome includes stenotic nares, elongated and thickened soft palate, laryngeal collapse, and tracheal hypoplasia. Pharyngeal collapse is also commonly seen. Researchers evaluated pharyngeal motion using tomography during respiration in 4 dogs diagnosed with brachycephalic airway disease, BAS. The scan showed laryngopharynx motion in the following order during inspiration: pharyngeal collapse, contraction, and laryngospasm. Researchers concluded that pharyngeal contraction during inspiration appears to contribute toward the worsening of clinical respiratory signs of BAS. Burnout can exacerbate work stress, further promoting a vicious circle. Stress and overload in the workplace are increasing worldwide and are often considered a cause of burnout. Indeed, a new study shows that work stress and burnout are mutually reinforcing. However, contrary to popular belief, burnout has a much greater impact on work stress than vice versa. This means that the more severe a person's burnout becomes, the more stress they will feel at work, such as being under time pressure, for example, said Professor Christian Dorman of Johannes Gutenberg University Mainz, JGU. Employees suffering from burnout should be timely provided with adequate support in order to break the vicious circle between work stress and burnout. Symptoms of burnout include exhaustion, cynicism, and reduced performance. The most important burnout symptom is the feeling of total exhaustion, to the extent that it cannot be remedied by normal recovery phases of an evening, a weekend, or even a vacation, said Dorman. To protect themselves from further exhaustion, some try to build a psychological distance to their work. That is, they alienate themselves from their work as well as the people associated with it and become more cynical, added Dr. Christina Guthier. She conducted the study as part of her doctoral thesis in Dorman's research group and was awarded with the dissertation prize of the Alfred Tevies Foundation in 2020. The study has recently been published in Psychological Bulletin. For the joint publication with Professor Christian Dorman and Professor Manuel Vogel of Humboldt Universität zu Berlin, Christina Guthier evaluated 48 longitudinal studies of burnout and work stress comprising 26,319 participants. The average age in the initial survey was about 42 years. 44% of the respondents were men. The longitudinal studies from 1986 to 2019 came from various countries, including predominantly European countries, as well as Israel, the USA, Canada, Mexico, South Africa, Australia, China, and Taiwan. Stopping the downward spiral and reducing the effect of burnout on work stress. The results challenge, or at least relativize, the common perception that work stress is the driving force behind burnout. Burnout can be triggered by a work situation, but that is not always the case, Dorman pointed out. Once burnout begins, it develops only very gradually, building up slowly over time. Ultimately, it leads to work being increasingly perceived as stressful. The amount of work is too much, time is too short, and work stress is too great. When exhausted, the ability to cope with stress usually decreases. As a result, even smaller tasks can be perceived as significantly more strenuous, explained Guthier, the first author of the article. We expected an effect of burnout on work stress. The strength of the effect was very surprising, she noted. The effect of burnout on perceived work stress can be somewhat mitigated if employees have more control over their own work and receive support from colleagues or superiors. According to Dorman, a new research area is emerging on the basis of this unique data because the strong boomerang effect of burnout on work stress has not yet been investigated. Key questions that need to be answered are: how can the effects of burnout on perceived work stress be reduced, and how can the development of this vicious circle be prevented? Dorman and Guthier suggest that the place to start is with management behavior. Employees should have the opportunity to give feedback on their work stress at any time and be appreciated. Last but not least, proper recovery could also help to stop the downward spiral. A gene defect associated with a severe canine lung disease identified. In 2007, Finnish Airedale Terrier breeders sent puppies that had died only a few days after being born for pathological examinations to the Finnish Food Safety Authority, Evira, the predecessor of the Finnish Food Authority. Some litters had lost several puppies. A research project initiated at Evira under the direction of Professor Marjuka Antila uncovered a problem in the puppy's lungs. There are vacuoles, or specialized membrane-bound organelles, in the epithelial or superficial cells of the pulmonary alveoli, which are responsible for gas exchange. They are tasked with producing a substance that reduces surface tension on the surface of these cells, essential to breathing. The vacuoles in the lungs of the dead puppies hadn't matured normally, nor were they able to produce this surfactant, explains doctoral candidate Katie Dillard, LVM, from the Faculty of Veterinary Medicine, University of Helsinki, and the Finnish Food Authority. A look at the dead puppies' pedigrees soon revealed that the cause was an inherited disease. The gene defect underlying the disease was located in the LAMP3 gene in Professor Hans Lohi's laboratory. Gene discovery fits well with the clinical picture. The gene produces a protein that functions precisely in the membranes of the vacuoles forming the surfactant. Nearly 7,000 individual dogs representing nearly 300 different breeds were screened for the gene defect, which was only found in the Airedale Terrier breed. 1/5 of Airedale Terriers were found to be carriers of the defect. In future, carriers can be identified with the help of a gene test, thus making it possible to avoid breeding combinations that give birth to sick dogs. Potential link with certain breathing problems in human newborns. Neonatal respiratory diseases are typical not only to dogs. Similar defects in the formation of surfactant produced by the epithelial cells of pulmonary alveoli also occur in newborn babies. As the LAMP3 gene has not previously been associated with diseases, in the future, its role in the breathing difficulties afflicting newborn babies should be investigated. This is another example of canine research that identifies a candidate gene for a human disease, says Professor Hans Lohi, who headed the study at the Faculty of Veterinary Medicine and the Faculty of Medicine, University of Helsinki, and the Foucault-Carlson Research Center.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hi, this is Dr. Jessica Turner, and I want to tell you about my new show, Living Well with Dr. Jessica. We talk about life, love, and living your healthiest life. Check it out on Vet Candy Radio or a podcast platform of your choice.
Secrets to Creating Balance in Your Life by Lexi Farrell. Back in the day, people were convinced that working was their only purpose in life. Fast forward to the present day, employers and employees are starting to realize that there is far more to life than spending it at the office. Companies are starting to realize that they're losing a lot of good employees due to burnout. Burning your employees out means you are working them too hard, and they don't enjoy or want to do their jobs anymore. Companies are hopping on the work-life balance train and allowing their employees to take a break from work when they're feeling burnt out. There are always ways you can create a work-life balance for yourself, too, though. Three ways to create a work-life balance for yourself. Prioritize your time. When it comes to both your professional life and your personal life, to-do lists are your best resource. Every morning and every week, you should write down all the things you need to get done that day or week. Don't write them in any particular order at first. Look at your list and then categorize them into these categories: urgent and important but not urgent but not important, needs to be done but after everything else is done. Breaking them into these categories will help you to manage your time on things that need to be done first. This creates a work-life balance because you won't be coming in early or staying late to get work done, so you can have more personal time for yourself each day. Manage your mind. When you're trying to balance your work and personal life, you have a million things on your mind. Did I finish that report for my boss? Did I forget to send that email? Did I feed the dog this morning? Do I have to drop off or pick up my children today? Juggling so many thoughts can lead you to feel burnt out. Take time each morning or night to organize your thoughts, whether that be through doing something you love like reading or spending 20 minutes meditating. Your mind is your bread and butter. Don't ruin it. Use your PTO. People oftentimes get so caught up in work that they don't take the PTO available to them. Our bosses can sometimes make us feel guilty for using our time, especially if it's a busy time of year. But don't let them get into your head. You worked for the time and you better use it. When you do use PTO, don't check in at work. They'll be able to survive without you for a week. Creating a work-life balance will only benefit you and your mind. We often see people get overwhelmed with their professional and personal lives, and they oftentimes can't separate the two. This will only lead to your feeling burnt out and run down, and that isn't good for anyone. So take that vacation and use the PTO hours. Take time to do things that bring you joy and happiness, and allow yourself to forget about work for a while. 7 Ways to Take Your Team Higher by Alyssa Madges, CVT. Over the years, I've led, been part of, or observed countless teams in both their successes and failures. Throughout all of this, I found a few common threads that leaders use to get the most out of their teams. In the next few paragraphs, I'll dig into how to take your team higher. Hire. The first step in creating your impactful team is to fill your roles with the right candidates. In many cases, it might require going through the interview process and hiring a new team member. However, it can often mean reaching out within your existing organization to identify the masters or those who are ready for a growth opportunity. In either case, it's important to talk to these candidates first to understand their skills, personalities, and career goals. It's also helpful to reach out to their coworkers and leaders to understand their performance in different situations. We are looking for teammates who bring knowledge and desire and who match the social dynamic of the team. Instruct. Part of being a leader is being a teacher to your team. Even if you have filled your team with experts versus growth candidates, you will need to teach them about your function, program, or processes. There are always aspects that are unique to your team, and ensuring that you teach and communicate this to new members is fundamental to your success. Instruction can also take on a larger and more basic meaning if some members of your team are there as a growth opportunity. In this case, you'll need to guide them and teach them a bit more than your experienced team members in the fundamentals of their role. While this can be intimidating for a leader based on the time aspect alone, I have found some of my greatest team members through growth opportunities. Most importantly, leverage your network and your larger team to help. If you connect your team members with your previous advisors, they can enhance this training. Set goals. Now that you've got your team together and you've started them on the path to learning, it's time to set your goals as a team. Teams will fall apart if they don't know what they're working towards. Without this direction, your team members will be running in different directions and completing actions that oppose each other. Imagine a soccer team that doesn't know which goal is theirs, and players are stealing the ball from each other. Well-defined goals serve to avoid this and keep your team moving in the same direction. A good way to see that your goals function effectively is to check if they are SMART, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. In a future post, we'll dig into more of what this means. Be accountable. This goes for you and your team. It means keeping deadlines, completing your actions, and communicating obstacles that may impact either one. This does not mean yelling and screaming over every missed deadline or every mistake. When mistakes happen, and they will, identify the root cause. This is not a blame game, but do look for how to address the situation. It is important for the person to understand and be involved in the process of correcting it, but it is more important to move forward. Dwelling or pointing fingers doesn't negate what happened. It just scares your staff. And this fear can stop the team's progress altogether. Empower. You've got your team, you've set the direction, you're all accountable. And now comes the most important and hardest part, empowering them. You are not an expert in every field. That's why you've surrounded yourself with those who are. You cannot possibly understand every detail or make every decision. This is why you have your people. So let go. Give them the power to make decisions and act within their area of responsibility. Support their decisions and actions to show your trust in them. Will every decision they make be perfect? No, but this is why you hold each other accountable. This is where the strength of your team to get things done, to impact and inspire, begins to take shape. Unfortunately, this is also the time and place where many leaders begin to fall apart. They feel it's their responsibility as a leader to question every decision and approve every action. Avoid this at all costs, as it causes productivity to grind to a halt. The trust begins to crumble, and resentment creeps in. Remember the steps you took to get your team here and keep the focus. Believe in them, and in turn, they'll believe in you. Rely. This is another area that needs lots of TLC, team leader care. The potential pitfall here is the desire to make every decision, which translates into the belief that they need to answer every question. Again, remember that you are not the expert in everything, and it is impossible to be. The team you have built is your council of trusted advisors. Count on them. When you are presented with tough challenges or decisions, bring them to your council. Ask for their thoughts, concerns, and advice. Ask questions to understand the implications, consequences, and benefits of their advice. Collect all these pieces and you'll be able to make a well-rounded, intelligent decision. Don't be afraid to turn a question over to your teammates if you don't know. Answering a question incorrectly undermines your credibility way more than letting someone else answer, and saying, "I don't know, but I will find out," is a good answer. Practice, practice, practice. These leadership behaviors do not always come naturally. So if you find your team falling apart, come back to this post and hit reset. Pick a step you can focus on and keep practicing these skills. Practice makes perfect. In time, you'll find that every team you create is a team that reaches higher. Don't be discouraged by your own mistakes. Treat yourself the same way as your team members. Find the cause, fix it, and keep moving forward. Both you and your team are learning and growing every step of the way. Training a Cat to Accept an Inhaler by Sarah Ellis. After completing a degree in zoology and psychology and a postgraduate diploma in companion animal behavior counseling, Sarah Ellis specialized in cats and was awarded a PhD for investigating ways to improve the welfare of cats housed in rehoming centers. She then spent several years working as a research scientist on feline welfare projects at the University of Lincoln. In 2015, Sarah joined International Cat Care as their feline behavior specialist. Feline asthma can be successfully treated with medication delivered through an inhaler. However, some cats are not comfortable with the inhaler, and the distress caused by using it can have a negative impact on the owner-cat relationship and even lead the owner to avoid using the inhaler with their cat. However, with careful introduction and positive reinforcement training, its use can be well tolerated by a cat. The veterinary nurse is in the ideal position to offer this training and support. After introducing the inhaler to the owner and explaining why it is needed and how it works, it is important to ensure the owner understands how cats learn and how their learning can be influenced in a positive way. Through this understanding, owners will be more receptive to undertaking the steps needed at home to train their cat for successful use. Contrary to popular belief, cats can be trained. For training to be effective, we must understand how cats learn. Cats are learning all the time, regardless of whether they are intentionally being taught something or just going about their daily lives. As an animal learns, it is developing negative or positive associations with the various things it encounters and interacts with. For example, it learns that certain things predict other things. It therefore associates two things together in its mind. These things can be sights, smells, sounds, touch, or a combination, and they can be good or bad. In order to associate that one thing predicts another, they need to occur one after the other very close in time. For example, if a cat is fearful of the hissing sound the inhaler makes when it is depressed, it will begin to associate this sound with the sight of the inhaler, as every time it sees the inhaler, it learns the hissing sound comes soon after. Thus, the cat soon starts to show fearful behavior of the inhaler, even before the hissing sound comes. Repetition tends to consolidate such behavior. However, it can sometimes take just one negative experience for a cat to learn to fear or become anxious of something. It is therefore much better to introduce the inhaler in a gradual fashion so that all the initial experiences are positive. Undoing a negative association can be difficult and time-consuming in comparison to teaching a positive association. Why do some cats find the use of an inhaler distressing? It is much easier to create positive associations than to overcome negative associations. Thus, the various components of using an inhaler need to be broken down into individual parts and introduced separately and positively. Only once accepted separately should they be brought together. Doing this also helps you to develop a training plan with the client. A training plan should identify all the various elements of inhaler use that a cat may not feel comfortable with. These are having something new, the inhaler, in the home. For a few cats, even this will make them wary. Being restrained in order to administer the inhaler. The cat's muzzle needs to be inserted into a small mask. The cat needs to remain still for several seconds, time it takes for 5 to 6 breaths, with the mask on its muzzle. Attached between the mask and the inhaler is a spacer chamber, which makes the device large in size in comparison to the cat's face. Depressing the inhaler will create a hissing sound, which cats are likely to find startling and possibly aversive. Wiping the face of the cat once the mask is removed with a slightly damp cloth to remove any traces of medication, which can sometimes cause a rash on the cat's face. A training plan should also identify which order things should be trained in for a particular cat. While some things need to be trained sequentially, for example, voluntary placing of the muzzle into the mask should be fully established before moving on to building duration of this behavior. Other behaviors could be trained simultaneously, although within different training sessions, for example, being calm around the sight and sound of the inhaler. Key point: to be effective, training needs to ensure that the cat has positive associations with the inhaler. A slow, gentle, step-by-step approach is required. What is a positive consequence for a cat? So, what exactly is a positive consequence for a cat? It is really important for the owner to think about what their specific cat enjoys. Food is going to be most useful in training, and therefore an owner should spend a bit of time identifying what their cat likes best of all. For example, this may be a commercial cat treat, a smear of meat paste, a chunk of their wet food, or a small piece of prawn or chicken. Training when a cat is hungry can also increase the value of the food rewards and motivate the cat to interact to achieve the food treats. Some cats also enjoy gentle stroking or scratches under the chin, and some enjoy play, such as with a wand toy or chasing a ping pong ball. However, the latter may be difficult to incorporate into the later stages of inhaler training, where the cat is required to stay still. In training terms, the positive consequences we give the cat, such as food, are known as reinforcers, as they reinforce the preceding behavior. In training, it is also very useful to associate the reinforcer with a marker word. By pairing the marker word, for example, good, with a reinforcer over several repetitions, for example, say good, offer treat, and repeat, the cat learns that the word good means the reinforcer is on its way. This is beneficial in training, as sometimes it is not possible to give the reinforcer at the exact time we wish to. For example, imagine the scenario where a cat approaches and sniffs a space chamber that has been placed on the floor. This is a desired behavior that needs reinforcing with a positive consequence, and so the owner calls the cat over to offer it a treat. What has actually happened is the behavior of walking away from the space chamber towards the owner led to the positive consequence of the food treat, not the approach and investigation of the space chamber. Thus, using a marker word allows precise marking or pinpointing of the desired behavior, letting the cat know exactly which behavior caused the positive consequence. Training steps to accepting an inhaler. 1. Acclimatizing the cat to the individual sights and sounds of the inhaler. The very first steps are to acclimatize the cat to the sight, smell, and sound of the inhaler in the home. Depending on the temperament of the cat and how anxious it is generally of new things, an owner may be better separating the inhaler into its separate parts, mask, space chamber, and inhaler, and introduce these separately. Introduction is as simple as placing it on the floor and allowing the cat to voluntarily investigate it. Since the inhaler will have come from the vets and likely to smell of the clinic, it is a good idea to have it in the home, out of sight of the cat, for a few days to let it lose some of its clinic smell. Additionally, it can be rubbed over with a cloth or glove that the cat has been stroked with, providing the cat enjoys this, so that it smells more familiar to the cat. The parts should not be presented to the cat, but simply placed near it, allowing the cat to choose when to investigate. Control and choice are critical for a cat to feel comfortable. When the cat does investigate them, the behavior should be positively reinforced. For example, a food treat offered or the cat stroked. Using a marker word can greatly help with the timing of the positive reinforcement. Once the cat is fully comfortable with the sight and smell of the individual parts of the inhaler, they can be pieced together and further investigation rewarded. If the cat ignores the inhaler after initial investigation, but seems in no way wary of it, we can encourage further investigation by placing treats near or on the inhaler. Separately to this, the cat can be trained to accept the sound the inhaler makes when depressed. We obviously do not want to waste medication, so a pressurized air duster can that makes a similar hissing sound is ideal. To begin with, the sound can be muffled by placing a towel over the can when depressed, at a distance from the cat. Every hiss sound should be quickly followed with a reward and should always occur at a volume that the cat can cope with. The cat should never feel anxious or worried by the sound. The cat will soon learn that the hiss sound predicts something positive. 2. Ensure the cat is comfortable with general restraint. A cat should not be held against its will while an inhaler is being administered, but gentle restraint holding the cat may help keep the cat still and calm without preventing the cat from removing its head from the mask if it feels it needs to. Having the cat sitting, facing away from its owner with their hand gently placed around its chest may be the easiest position. For some cats, being on the owner's lap may be the most comfortable. Gentle restraint should only last a second or two initially, marker words said, and the cat offered a reinforcer, and built up gradually to the time needed to administer the inhaler. 3. Training voluntary positioning of the muzzle in the mask. The ideal situation is that the cat voluntarily places its muzzle into the mask and holds it there. Bringing the mask towards the cat and pushing it onto the muzzle should be avoided at all costs. Training success is met when the cat is reaching its head forward to get its muzzle into the mask at each offering of the mask. We can learn a lot from muzzle training in dogs, using positive reinforcement, to learn how to do this, of course, adapted to a cat's needs. Repeatedly take the mask out from behind your back so the cat can see it and reward their calm behavior. This is repeated until the cat is showing signs of anticipating the reward on the sight of the mask. The next stage is to encourage the cat to voluntarily place its muzzle into the mask. Some cats may voluntarily place their muzzle into the mask as they investigate it. Others may need some encouragement in the form of a food lure placed inside the mask. Allow the cat to eat the treat within the mask. You can use a solid treat or a paste smeared into the mask. Keep the mask still. Never move it toward the cat's face. This always gives the cat a choice. The idea is that whenever the mask is presented, the cat chooses to place its muzzle into the mask. After lots of repetitions, the cat should do this even without a treat in the mask. Of course, once the muzzle is in the mask, a marker word should be given and a treat delivered. In order to build up the amount of time the cat is comfortable with its muzzle in the mask, delivery of the treat needs to take more time and occur in the mask. This could be achieved by using a paste-like treat delivered in a syringe through the end of the mask that the cat can lick off the end of the syringe. Always remove before the cat pulls back out of the mask. You can even move the mask gradually away from the cat to encourage the cat to push its face forward and keep it in the mask. 4. Bringing it all together. Once the cat is comfortable with placing its face into the mask for the required length of time, the spacer and inhaler can be added to the mask. At this stage, it won't be possible to deliver the treat straight into the mask. So, to get the cat accustomed to placing its muzzle in the mask for the required length of time and then releasing when it hears the marker word for a food treat delivered out of the mask. Next, it is time to introduce the depression of the inhaler and the combination of the sound and the muzzle in the mask together. Ensure rewards are plentiful and of really high value. Providing ongoing support. Owner success is going to be greatly influenced by how much support they have throughout the training process. Talking it through face-to-face in the clinic and ensuring the owner has plenty of resources to refer to at home will greatly help. Handouts with step-by-step photographs and access to training videos are really useful resources. Quite often, owners rush through the training steps too fast or miss out vital training steps, and that causes disengagement from the cat. Being on hand for telephone and/or email support throughout the process will help prevent owners giving up on the training process. Thank you for listening to Vet Candy Magazine. Please subscribe to this channel to stay up to date with everything Vet Med. It's Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
It's Vet Candy Radio.